So I gate crashed the party, so to speak. I confess to being a technophobe, but having said that, I'm perhaps convinced that I can teach a dinosaur, an old dinosaur, new tricks. I'm going to look at two issues primarily. The first is the what I would call the evolution going forward of blockchain from a legal perspective. Now, contracts, transactions, and records of those transactions and contracts constitute, we know, the foundations of our economic and legal systems. But they just haven't kept up with the digital tools that are available. And it's a bit like a Ferrari being stuck in a rush hour traffic gridlock. But with blockchain, we can imagine a world in which contracts are embedded in digital code, stored in a transparent and readily accessible fashion, and where they're protected from deletion or tampering. But of course, that doesn't mean that in the immediate future, intermediaries like lawyers, bankers, advocates, and brokers are simply going to be dispensed with. Happily, I might add. And I regard blockchain from a legal point of view not so much as disruptive technology but as foundational technology. In other words, your disruptive technologies, your Uber or your Airbnb, where they simply just turned single industries on their heads. But with regard to foundational technology, what comes to mind is something like the distributed computer networks, the TCP/IP, the transmission control protocols, internet protocols, was developed in the early 70s. It took almost 30 years for it to become ubiquitously used as the technology expanded. And I expect that from a legal point of view, especially when it comes to smart contracts, which is the most immediate use that I see in the legal context, it's going to take some time and possibly even decades before the use of smart contracts becomes ubiquitous globally. But having said that, you know, Bitcoin is the first application of blockchain technology. The parallels between blockchain and TCP/IP are manifestly clear. So clearly, blockchain can reduce dramatically the costs of transactions and the potential to become the system of all records, and that's clear. The big issue with regard to these things is time. It takes, for the moment, with the intermediaries, transactions take a lot of time. So if you think about stock trades, they might take milliseconds to for the transaction to go through, but for transfer of ownership of the stock, for example, it can take some days. But all of this is going to take major legal, social, and political change in order for it to become globally used. And of course, smart contracts may be the most transformative blockchain applications at the moment. They automate payments, and the transfer of currency or assets happen as soon as conditions are met. So a smart contract is an agreement whose execution is automated. And the easy example is a vending machine. You put a 5-rand coin in, that's the condition is meant, you get a chocolate bar out. And from an easy example point of view, to my mind, it's an easier way of understanding. Now, of course, there are competing conceptions of what a smart contract is. For lawyers, the term contract automatically brings to mind a document that contains rights and obligations. With computer scientists, of course, they're thinking of a contract more in terms of code. But at its heart, a smart contract is a computer program. Encoded logic that receives certain inputs and executes a set of instructions to reach a number of predefined outcomes. The normal dumb contract, so to speak, is characterized by mutual promises and obligations between the parties. I want to buy a car, I make an offer, the vendor of the car accepts the offer at the price, and we've now created mutual rights and obligations. So the problem with smart contracts, of course, is how to meld the normal legal language on the one hand with the predetermined outcomes that would be recorded in digital code. And it's complex because in order to be sufficiently expressive, obligations may import indeterminate concepts such as reasonableness. Can't code that. The expression of an obligation in code may not actually reflect the agreement between the parties, and some legal clauses are subject to interpretation. So, of course, operational or executory clauses are relatively easy. You can code for that. Payments or deliveries. And here's a conundrum. In certain instances, there may be no legal contract as we understand it in its pure sense at all. So, for example, you could have a computer program that's formulated so that a predetermined asset gets moved from the account of A to the account of B when a certain condition is met. The software doesn't create the contract. The software doesn't create the obligation. It simply executes as soon as a predetermined condition is met. I've isolated, there are a myriad of examples, but I've isolated two instances in law where I believe that blockchain is going to give rise to issues, and that's why it's going to take time to become universally accepted in across all spheres. And the first is that relating to competition or antitrust considerations. And there, blockchain can give rise to what I believe are the following issues, some of them. The adoption of technical standards that prevent participation by competitors. And there's clearly an antitrust or competition issue there. The risk of collusion amongst competitors in a closed system. And then the exchange of commercially sensitive information between competitors participating on a blockchain. The second example is in intellectual property or and IT. Who actually owns the information on the blockchain? And there we're dealing with the algorithms, the database, and the software. There might clearly be infringement risks that arise relating to the use of the technology from an IP point of view. The impact of the use of open source software and blockchain technologies, the legal effect of bugs in a blockchain system, and of course, the bugbear, which Natalie touched on, cybersecurity considerations. Now, having said all of that, and against the background of my view that it's going to take a little more time than people expect for it to become universally used, of course, it's happening at quite a fast rate, especially in the first world jurisdictions. For example, in the United States, there's an organization called Open Law. And Open Law allows lawyers to automatically generate legal documents, agreements, and embed smart contracts into them. Go onto their website, check it out. It's very interesting. Co-founded by a guy called Aaron Wright, who is a professor at the Cardozo Law School in New York City, who's also co-written a book called Blockchain and the Law. Of course, happily, there's general consensus that lawyers won't need to be coders. But they will need to work with the engineers and the computer scientists, because they understand the processes and they understand what's required for the proper protection of parties' rights and obligations in the contractual sphere. I've done some research given the time.
Can I have a look at the PC?
The PC?
Yes, I saw that it went blank.
No, I don't need it. Okay. I'm a dinosaur.
Sorry.
Thank you. Normally, I only present to one person, and that's a judge. So, and we don't use... What do they call them? PowerPoint. Natalie, what did you call it? Decks. Stack deck. Slide decks. Slide decks. Yeah. For example, in Arizona, there's now recognition, statutory recognition of smart contracts. In Vermont, blockchain can now be used, is admissible as evidence in courts of law. In Chicago, they've made huge strides with real estate records. And some of you may be aware that the state of Delaware in the United States is one of the states where corporations have flocked because it's business friendly to corporations. They're on the cusp of initiating registration of shares in Delaware companies. More than 60% of Fortune 500 companies are registered in Delaware. More than 50% of all public companies in the United States are registered in Delaware. So, it's taking off, there's no doubt about it. And then the risks. From a contractual and perhaps general business strategic point of view, they're clearly business regulatory risks. One has to ensure that with any of these smart contracts, they should accurately represent the business, economic, and legal arrangements, especially as Natalie touched on, where you're working across borderless, in a borderless situation, multi-jurisdictional. There's the question of enforcement of contracts, because currently there's no real legal precedence on the enforcement of smart contracts in lieu of the physical contracts. There are clearly information security risks. From a business point of view, there's strategic risks. Shall I wait and see how the technology unfolds, or shall I be an early adopter? Businesses need to take those issues into account. There's business continuity risk because people use legacy computer systems. How will those gel with the blockchain technology, and what sort of risks is it going to contain? And then related to that are the obvious reputational risks. My colleague, Mike Laws, with whom I've worked quite closely on looking at some of these things, he's a junior advocate at the Johannesburg Bar. He's got a number of thoughts relating to the status of digital assets, tokenization, securitization of cryptocurrencies. Hopefully he'll give us some insight from the floor on that, because I'm a little bit behind the curve, I can't lie. But I just want to give you, finishing off, just two interesting anecdotes. The first is that in April, now, 6 weeks ago, Dubai launched Emirates Blockchain Strategy 2021. Under this initiative, 50% of government transactions will adopt the blockchain platform within the next 3 years. It's expected to save over, get this, 400 million printed documents. And in addition, the Dubai government agency tasked with overseeing land purchases and approval of real estate trades launched a blockchain-powered system to secure financial transactions, electronically record real estate deals, and so forth. You may have heard of a little town in the Northern Cape called Orania, where modern voortrekkers have gone to live. They're also on the cusp of having their own cryptocurrency called the Aura. They've already have a currency, it's backed by the Rand. So, you know, in the middle of the Platteland of the Northern Cape, it's also taken hold. It's just a matter of time. Thank you.